Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUPO 88.7 Patio Beating List. Our phone number at the station is 337-8874. And today we are talking to Fabio Gonzalez. He is a program supervisor. And he's going to be talking today about a new program that Imperial County Behavioral Health has, thanks to the Mental Health Services Act, the MHSA. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, Maria. How are you?
Good. Today you're going to be talking about one of the new programs, which is the Supportive Engagement Network, better known as the SEN program. Correct. Tell me a little bit about what the SEN program is about.
The SEN program is an MHSA product for outpatient care services for people that are gravely ill and that sometimes tend to fall to the cracks.
Gravely ill as in?
As in the diagnosis of severe depression, mostly the three. Diagnosis, the main three numbers of the diagnosis, schizophrenia, severe depression, bipolar, that's three, thank you.
Or better known as, they have the seriously mentally ill.
That's what we refer to them as a seriously mentally ill, because these people tend to leave the hospital or crisis episode or conservatorship, and they don't have places to go. They need services, emergency services like shelter, like hospitalization sometimes again, or a dentist appointment, or a driver's license application. It's a myriad of services that we're trying to provide right now, but we just took off 2 weeks ago. So right now we have like 9 clients that are being served at this moment. So we're doing okay for the 3 weeks that we've been in operation.
Oh, good. How does the SEN program benefit the client? We'll start with the client, the family, but then most importantly, the community. Why was it developed?
Because our clients started to fall through the cracks when they were released from the places I mentioned before for the situations. Therefore,
they didn't have a place, right?
Sometimes the family, unfortunately, does not want them back, or sometimes the family is going through financial problems, so the client, per se, becomes a burden on the family. So we're trying to avoid that by counseling as much as we can and offering services that can help the family and the client. Let's say the client is homeless. We provide shelter, we provide food, and we try to link them to the other services that we have available. Could be legal, could be medical, benefits assistance, the basic needs for survival, all for the clients. So that's basically what we do. We just provide aftercare after the release from those three situations.
How about the family?
The family sometimes, or most of the time, will not participate for some reason, strange reason. Sometimes it's just fear of the unknown. They're not prepared. And our case manager, which is Renata, he's very well prepared. I'm lucky to have him, as well as my other partner, Christina, which is the our secretary. And the three of us have a passion for what we do. And that means that we approach the client as...
But how would it benefit the family?
That's what I mean. We approach the clients in a way that we make them feel comfortable, so they open up to us and they sign releases of information for us to come to the family. Otherwise, they feel like neglected and they will not sign releases. So we don't have anybody to call. So that's another benefit that we have. It's a family thing as well as you could be just individual. But the main and important thing is that the client has to accept the service. At the time,
everything, most of ours, almost 99.8% of our services at Behavioral Health are volunteers.
And you'll be surprised how many people reject the services.
Yeah.
It's hard to change some lifestyle. And being home sometimes becomes a lifestyle. Because they don't feel what responsibility. They feel what responsibility. They want, you know, like the usual paying bills, paying rent, and all that. So we try to customize it as much as we can. The clinician meets with the client, and they make a plan. Yeah.
And finally, how would the SEND program benefit our community?
It will benefit the community in ways that you probably will see less people pushing carts on the streets, because they do that as a feeling of belonging to something, so that's pushing that little cart. A lot of people don't understand it, that, I wouldn't call it a feeling, but it's just a sensation, an emotion, that pushing that little cart is a sense of belonging, okay? So if we help those people with shelter, food, and all the medical necessities and some kind of stable financial situation, they will stay away from the streets. Hopefully.
We're trying,
but we will try.
Today, we are talking to Frank Gonzalez. He is the program supervisor for one of the newly developed programs under the Behavioral Health System here in the county. It's the Supportive Engagement Network, and very known as the SEND program.
Correct.
So tell me, going back, that you see a lot of people right here, you know, when it comes to this radio station on Adams Avenue, if they're in the park, you see a lot of people there sleeping, and, you know, they're getting up, and the Convention Army is right next door. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their carts, their shopping carts, they have their animals with them, also I assume by the old Walmart, Costco. Are most of those people, you know, do they have, like, are they mentally ill?
A big number of them are, or are getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we regret not having enough means to reach all of them. Because, again, we cannot go to them. We cannot even offer the services, because it's not like somebody can come from the street and I need services.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's only for the people that are referred to us by the clinicians.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the only two ways you can get access to the program is through clinician conservatorship,
mm-hmm.
or from a hospitalization or a crisis episode. All those three refer clients to us. So they come to us immediately as soon as they're released. And it's a good program because, again, it's remember the term falling through the cracks, and we always say it. And this will probably alleviate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I say a little bit because we're just brand new and not a lot of people know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we're doing right now. We're trying to reach.
How long have you been out? 3 weeks.
3 weeks. But in those 3 weeks, Renee has a lot of contact with many all the local agencies, with the legal system, with the probation officer, the other emergency programs that we have available.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he has excellent skills, and this helps a lot with running the program.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not, I wouldn't say wasting time, but we're not using time to train people.
Mm-hmm.
We already know what we need to do, so it helps a lot. Mm-hmm. Because we just went through straight through the program. But it's, and again, we also assist juveniles.
Mm-hmm.
But this has to be done through a responsible adult.
So you take in, what is the age group?
it's not really, it could be a minor, 8 years old, mm-hmm. up to 21.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have legal problems or juvenile matter pending, you know, stuff like that, we do assist them all that.
So they have to go to a prompt
yes.
crisis.
Yes.
Right?
So
hospitalization or...
Conservatorship. Yes. Because, you know, when people get a conservatorship, they're kind of...
Yeah, tell us a little bit about it,
because
maybe they don't know what conservatorship
is. Excuse me. When people need conservatorship status, they are kind of disoriented, because...
Why have you been on it first?
On conservatorship?
Mm-hmm.
It's determined by the staff, the clinicians, that if this person is capable of having, quote-unquote, a normal life, make payments, go attend to meetings, appointments. In other words, cannot care for himself or herself, then they're appointed somebody to do that. A it went through the courts, through the court system. So when they could be, it could be a 30 day sometimes, it could be a year or two or permanent. Okay? So when people that are discharged from conservatorship, they come directly to us. There's no interim time that you can say, oh, we lost them, or we lost this person, because immediately it's referred to the center. Okay? Same thing with the hospitalizations and the crisis. Because as soon as the persons are discharged from crisis, they come automatically to us. Mm-hmm. Of course, the services are offered. We tell them that we have an alternative program, and they would like to participate. So the family clients are just suspect.
Mm-hmm.
But if they accept, then we start providing. The clinician works a plan, what we call a plan. And all the basic needs that the person needs are covered, are trying to cover, which is emergency shelter, transportation, issues or housing, emergency food, emergency clothing, so very much inclusive.
Whatever it takes.
Yes, the mental health.
That's the motto of the Mental Health Services Act, whatever
right.
it takes.
We also do SSA benefits, the application assistance, because sometimes our clients are not used to dealing with people, and they're kind of afraid of going to the agencies. So our technician, which is Renee, will help them and guide them, you know, practically take them by the hand and show them. Okay. We're not enabling.
Mm-hmm.
We're enabling the clients to look themselves. So it's kind of a learning situation.
So if they go, they get out of hospitalization or whichever of those three that you mentioned, hospitalization, crisis, conservatorship, they are provided these then.
They're offered the same services. As soon as they're discharged from the program.
For how long? And if it's decided that they need continued mental health treatment, are they provided in the same program or what happens to them?
Okay, it's we
because it's an emergency, you know, they get out
yeah.
and then back to care, they need housing, you put them in a housing shelter or.
Then they need applications for Medi-Cal,
they
need food stamps, all that.
But it's determined during that time that you know what this person is going to need continued.
Correct. Not until the person is stable in terms of, okay, I can do my own shopping, I can go to my own appointments, I can take my medication without somebody telling me. Then we make an evaluation, and then we decide if we continue or we stop the service.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, most of the people, we're calculating 30 to 60 days
mm-hmm.
to get them like in shape,
mm-hmm.
and then after that, we evaluate again. We're constantly evaluating
mm-hmm.
because it's according to the plan. If the client is responding, so our program is really working.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we make appointments, like it is happening right now, we have lost some of our clients because they are not responding to our appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately when they or whatever needs for from the from those three situations, they get referred to a clinician. They have an appointment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even in crisis, if it happens to be on a weekend, we have a law that the after hours personnel has available. And if something happens during the weekend, we're not there. Immediately Monday morning we come in, we check the list, we check for telephones, for addresses and names.
Mm-hmm.
So we contact the person immediately. So now there's no, we have no excuse of saying it was over the weekend or this was on the last or etc.
And we, I mean, we encounter problems when it's a voluntary program, even with the juveniles. You know, we get referrals from probation and we contact the parents, we contact, you know, to pay the juveniles, but sometimes, you know, we offer a services that, you know, they're voluntary.
That's
you know.
One of the reasons, too, that we can work
with. Some of them take it, some of them accept them, some of them deny services.
The provisional officers and the parole officers are aware now that we have this program, so,
mm-hmm.
so they like it because it's like a question for them, too. Mm-hmm. See, they work on the legal side, we work on the reporting side. So we're working together towards the same goal. So it looks pretty good, and so far we have had no problems with the agencies, and we even have referrals for alcohol and drugs,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes people do not need other services other than dry alcohol or BOA services. So, and then that's all the linkage to those agencies
mm-hmm.
necessary, and the paperwork, and see, we're very excited because it's pulling together very well. It's coming together very well.
So even going back to you mentioned alcohol and drugs,
yes.
a lot of the people that might end up at crisis is not because of a mental illness,
exactly.
because of a the symptoms of being intoxicated under the influence of alcohol or drugs or both.
Yes. That's when the
do they still qualify for the symptom? Determine that it was only an alcohol or drug.
No, if that's the situation, it's not that they don't qualify, but we still do the referrals. And that counts for us because we are guiding for the person, the client, towards an appropriate program they need to attend. So
most of the time, most of the time, even when it's determined the symptoms, their behaviors is caused by drugs. Most of the time, you assess them and you find out that, they're probably using the drugs to cope for them.
The stresses are all there and, but you'd be surprised how many people, this is quite shocking sometimes because people complain that the services were not there, and not that we have them, some people are rejecting them. Mm-hmm. And it's something we're trying to understand because we didn't have it before. And people would fall through the cracks, and we're on it, what happened to them. So there was a follow-up after the discharge.
Mm-hmm.
So now there is, and luckily I can say we're all working together. We're working as a team, and that's the magic of it, because now we have all the referrals in place. We have telephone numbers. We have places. If they're homeless, we find where they're lodging temporarily, and we make the contacts. The hardest thing right now is making the clients comply with the appointments.
Do you mentioned about youth.
Yes.
The minors. Let's say that the family is homeless. Do you provide shelter or?
We try. It would be on an evaluation basis. Okay, how needy the family is. What other resources that the family has.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not trying to isolate the client from the family.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we cannot provide service for the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically for the client, but that doesn't mean we cannot. Assist the family by referring them somewhere else.
In that case, you can always refer them to the loss and
take. Yes, exactly.
provide shelter for the whole family.
Even the research center, sometimes
the research center does provide services for youth 16, 17, and 18 year olds.
And that's where they take advantage of the groups that they have there, and they have the wonderful staff there that works too. Everything. So now there's no excuse for a client to just leave.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, again, they tell us, I'm sorry, I don't need the services, or I do not want the services.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting there. We're getting there. Again, there's nine people, but those nine people are very welcome because we're working with them. The only thing is that we have to, and we even provide transportation if they need to.
Do you have a certain amount of people that you can take in?
At this point, no. We're calculating it's going to be like a revolving door all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people are going to come in, they're going to use the services, they're going to leave, or they're going to stay. But we're calculating services up to a year. In some cases, very rare. But those are the time frames that we're working with.
We're located at 202
North 8th Street at the three-story building,
mm-hmm.
Behavioral Health, and we're in the first floor, and the phone number is 482-4011. This is where they can reach our secretary, and she will take care of
them. Yeah, again, it's only, again, the criteria for admission to the program, to the SEN program, which is the Supportive Engagement Network, is through
conservatorship, crisis, or hospitalization.
Do we have a lot of people who are going to hospitalization to get hospitalized? We don't have a mirror right, correct? There's no hospitalization here in the Valley?
No. No, we have to send it to San Diego.
Wow.
And it's an entire process because the client is found to be in need of being hospitalized. So what happens is we call the ambulance first so we can arrange transport. Well, that's the crisis issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But this leads to us or not, because if the client is hospitalized, then we stop there.
Mm-hmm.
We stop there. Not under the line of discharge from the hospital. And we get the referral for crisis, then we can start working on it.
Do we have a lot of hospitalizations?
It's just hard to say, Maria, because it depends on the weather, it depends on the
weather, what do you mean by that?
Because if it's too hot, and I'm not joking on this, sometimes things that were like hotel service, and we understand that our staff, that they're tired, they come in and knock the doors, and you know, I need a shelter, I need food, I'm hungry, but we can deal with that, we can accept that, because but that's something that it's happened, okay. But that's why I was mentioning the weather. It's too hot. People will do whatever such service is about. And that's one of the things they do for clients, our clients. And the other thing would be the, let's say on weekends. I don't think that would happen in the family, in the family fights. The stresses are all there. So people, sometimes we have 4, 5, or 6 clients in crisis during the weekend. So it's really hard sometimes, and those clients probably have that within hospitalization, depending on the gravity situation. And but that's why I don't have a number to give you, because sometimes prices can go like 1 or 2 days without any client at all. That's why I admire the staff of the crisis, and particularly doing a good job leading them. And but sometimes, you know, that's all we can do, just wait.
Okay,
yeah, too. Yeah, Danny. Don't forget Daniel. He's a kitchen, he's everything, but he's like in his cubicle. That's his working station, and he barely comes out of it. But he's working on projects, he's working on the paperwork, the notes, all that stuff. Necessary.
So today we're talking to Carlos González. He's the program supervisor for the One of the New Programs at Canadian Skills Like Behavioral Health, the STEM program, or the Supportive Engagement Network. And we will continue talking about the STEM program right after a short break.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUPO 88.7. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And today we're talking to Carlos González on the new program that Imperial County Behavioral Health developed or created. It's called the STEM program, the Supportive Engagement Network. Now I know it, Carlos.
I had difficulty yesterday with the Spanish translation.
How are you talking in Spanish?
I was afraid you were going to get mad. Remember, we cannot translate literally, so we came up with the proper words for this in my desk. And I can remember them, but it's really easy to pronounce in Spanish, and people will understand it very, very quick. I'm going to call next week, as a matter of fact, for the Spanish show next time, and I'm going to tell them the definition. Okay, to recap a little, the STEM program is defined as a medically necessary specialty mental service that is provided to a client after he or she has been terminated from either conservatorship, crisis, or hospitalization. Okay? The services shall be targeted to a goal which is documented in the final record, which the clinician makes together with the client.
And the services that
the system provides? The services are the basic needs. The basic needs for a client to regain his own independence and not feel like he's a victim of mental health situation or stigma, which happens a lot. They think and they see they admit. Because that's very important. You have to admit that you have a diagnosis in that trial. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are in denial, and part of that denial becomes a stressor, and they fall again. Mm-hmm. They fall again. And that's one of the things we're seeing. The main thing that, I cannot say the main thing, but a lot of people fall in crisis because of family issues.
Has the admittance or into the crisis, a crisis center, gone up since our economy or the nation's economy, its economy, has worsened?
I may be wrong, but per my observations, I continue to see the family issue as predominant.
But it hasn't gone up, or has it stayed the same?
again, it's hard to say, Maria, because 1 month could be like 30, 40 people, and 11 months would be just 5 or 10 people that we see. Great. Not much. According to my observations, and for, I was there for a year.
We have stats on that.
We do have stats, but that would be Patricia, who has all the numbers.
I think I've questioned this because, I mean, our economy, the Asian economy is in a downturn, a recession. But I'm thinking that we haven't changed because our unemployment rate has always been the highest in the, I think now we're in the nation. We've probably been the highest in California. I think it came out on CNN recently. We did. It came out on CNN, and Imperial County was the highest unemployment rate.
Yes.
Which is not good.
But the government
is struggled. In other words, we're a struggling county, and we're fighters. We stretch on.
We
survive.
Going back to your question about what I see in terms of the economy, it may be sometimes that the unemployment issue, it becomes a situation, okay, because the client is trying to survive, but if there's not enough money for food, enough money for gas, enough money for, again, basic needs, that creates a trigger on the client. And it becomes control because the family, again, has dealt with the issue, but they're not trained enough to deal with the client. They know how to deal more with the issue, but not with the client. And that's when our clients fall into crisis. Because they start getting violent, they start getting handled, they start shouting, yelling, and the family doesn't want to hear that.
So could be that the family is also not aware of it, not, you know, doesn't have the knowledge on their mental illness.
And
it can be treated, that it can be...
It's understandable. Sometimes they're afraid because it's right there at home. It's right there at home. And going back to the people that push the cars here on the street, a lot of the stigmatization that we go through is because the people assume that those people pushing that car are crazy. That's the word they use. And again, they're stigmatizing everybody because they're pushing a car, a grocery cart. And those are the people that would like to focus, of course, besides everybody else. But like you said, it can help by removing some of those people from the streets. But again, I'm just guessing because they have to accept the services.
It's voluntary.
It's hard. But again, we're not going to get discouraged because of that. We're going to try as much as we can. And that's what we're trying to do. Because, again, we're a team, and that means if the team doesn't work together, then the communication stops, and the client's not so properly.
So then the client goes into the SIM program, they need to take care of them, go into the SIM program, and then it's after a while determined that they need continued treatment, then you refer them or you do a continuum of care and go put them back into the teams or into what? Now, I know it's changed now.
We make another evaluation, and as long as it takes and what it takes, we are going to do it. We're going to proceed with it. And my understanding is that we can provide services up to a year. But most of the time, I'm sure it's going to be interrupted services because, you know, the clients are not saying, yeah, that's what we're trying to reach.
And this is all through emergency money?
Yes, sir. Everything. We're lucky. We're blessed to have that money available.
What if the client doesn't have any, like you said, most of the people coming out of hospital patients or they're homeless don't have Medi-Cal? All the services that you provide to send it back through emergency money, do they need to have Medi-Cal or just if they don't have Medi-Cal?
As soon as we know of that fact that they don't have insurance or Medi-Cal or any other means, then they get on the ball and starts working the application immediately. So if this person goes into the hospital, you know, we're already working with the application. But yet, we cannot provide their services because the person is hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to discharge, and then we can proceed with the program. But when we move past, in the meantime, in the interim, we can provide shelter for them. It depends on, it's on a needed basis, on a needed basis. The dangers are very good at the time.
Well, hopefully our, you know, healthcare, or the healthcare reform that President Obama is proposing goes through. I was listening to him last night, on one of the channels, and he was talking about healthcare reform and, you know, the insurance, and it sounds really promising. And it's, you know, they were giving out statistics that the United States spends around so much, like $700 billion on healthcare a year. You know, that's repaying the premiums and everything, but we rank 36th in the world on providing, you know, our life expectancy.
Because of the programs and maybe even the doctors.
There's good doctors. There's always good doctors, just like everybody else, good and bad and okay. really good and okay. But it's, you know, I was listening to them and it's in it, right? And hopefully it does. I mean, President Clinton tried it and it failed, and now, you know, Hillary Clinton also tried it, and
and that's not good in Washington, because here locally the community is the one that needs to be educated as well.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with us.
What do you mean by that?
Like going back to the point that you mentioned about the families,
mm-hmm.
you know, how far can we go with the families? As far as needed, as far as necessary. If we need to train them, even if whenever I have to go there and talk to them.
It's just part of, I mean, if I would have been working here at Behavioral Health, I wouldn't have known anything about alcohol and drug or addiction or mental health. I would have been just how I was before I started working here, is that people who are using drugs are weak.
Yes.
You know, that was my thinking. Come on, you know. But that's, I mean, that's not the way it is.
And remember, people don't think of alcoholism as a drug.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a, you know, temporary, I'm going to stop anytime I want, all that stuff, and I know that's not the case.
I've told this in the video before, is that when I was younger, I would pass by Huron 8th Street and pass the old, you know, mental health, that's, you know, if you behave bad, you're going to be locked up right there with a reason you are. And I thought about that for the longest time, when I started working here, and I think I was 27 years old. So for 27 years, the way I thought, you know, the way I perceived people who are mentally ill, who have issues on those sides.
But now that's asked this question, how far...
But now that I've been here, you know, 12 years.
How far are we now? Yeah. Do people know more now?
I'm hoping because of this radio show.
Yeah,
and now that we are on podcast at KXO.com, radio, KXORadio.com, we are on podcast. You can listen to us at any time, anywhere.
But again, it's right now, we're all happy about it, and again, like I think it's part of saying the same thing. We're working as a team, and that's the main thing for us, because if we see a client that has all the symptoms of something that, you know, we don't have a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
But more or less, we can tell what's going to happen. So we kind of prepare we picture the client, and then we picture the service.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's something that we're working right now. Renee and I are on the same page on that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like is also is that we have plenty of time to contact the client. It's kind of like rush, you know, you have to be here, you have to be there, meeting stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do my regular meetings and Renee does too, but we have the time to talk to them, to talk to the family, to reach, to go out and look for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have one person who was working at McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't want us to contact the family,
mm-hmm.
so we would go to the workplace, as private or as confidential, mm-hmm. as much as we can. We don't say who we are. We wear our badges on purpose for that, to avoid any...
You don't drive the kind of car?
No. We park it somewhere a block away sometimes. A block away from the place, because, you know, we're aware everything is going on. And we try to alleviate as much as possible confidentiality, you know, in terms of respect. So this person is no longer working there, so that's one of the cases that we're working on. How do we get in touch with this person who is in Mexico now?
Do you provide services? I mean,
We tried, okay, we did everything possible with this person, right? Mm-hmm. But since this person moved out of the country,
mm-hmm.
we have no ways of contacting him. Mm-hmm. So what we're planning on doing with this case, we're going to wait until Friday to see if something happens in terms of we go to his house, because he signed a release, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he asked us not to contact the wife,
mm-hmm.
which puts us in a predicament.
Mm-hmm.
Because how do we get in touch with him? We can't.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, I'm sure our manager is going to agree to terminate that case.
Mm-hmm.
But you have cases
to,
like that.
Did you try that?
Yes, everything is documented. They said, oh, and we're allowed 3 strikes,
mm-hmm.
meaning if you lose your appointments 3 times, we're not going to babysit you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to help you, but don't, we're not going to babysit you. So 3 strikes, and you're out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We can always reopen it, right?
Yeah.
But we need the client's authorization and the acceptance of the program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, it's a good program. It works well because there's no excuse not to collect services. And we are going to use the services as much as we can. We're going to exhaust all avenues to do it.
That's good. I mean, that's good. I mean, that's good. It's, again, it's that money that images they have, the mental health services tax, which we're getting the money for the STEM program, just for the patient client, all these acronyms. It has the whatever it takes model. So you do whatever it takes.
But the thing is, okay, let me ask you something about the stats and the tape in terms of, let's say we bring you a man with schizophrenia, whatever, a diagnosis, right? What would be the immediate service response to that? Do they get admitted into the program, like, because we're referred, that means the person is qualified to go to staff, or you still have your own?
We still have to assess.
Your own criteria?
We have to assess them, but in the meantime, we can provide services.
While you're
yeah.
assessing?
Yeah.
Wow.
We do
that. That's wonderful.
We do that. We do a screening,
uh-huh.
And we see that there's a need for housing, food, clothing.
So we're like we do.
Mm-hmm. And then we live up. If they don't have the criteria, then we are admit them.
Mm-hmm.
But we still refer out. We still refer out. But if they needed services, needed services, we could refer out any needed services.
So basically, we have a criteria.
We provide.
Because I know the research center will do the same thing.
Yeah, and that gets paid through the image of the money.
Thanks, God, for the images.
I know, but it's hard. You know, the economy is in a downturn, and we know that next year we're probably going to get less money through images made because it's all based on all the millionaires.
Yeah. It's taxed
1%. So if there's less millionaires in California, then that means that we get less money to provide these needed services to the mentally ill population. So,
even, it popped into my mind, immigration issues. Yes. We don't deny services to people that are pending status.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, the immigration status is not that important like it was before.
Mm-hmm.
Before, somebody would come to us, and I don't mean this program,
mm-hmm.
but other programs, you know, we couldn't provide services for them.
And through alcohol and drugs, or for our kids, if we are not immigration officers, so we don't check on that.
Gotcha.
We don't check on that. When we find out that they're illegally here, that the child is illegally a minor, there's some money that provides
the
So for us, we don't have
same thing. We're
still living here in the county.
I know some people will come up with those issues, you know, all illegal and whatever that is. Well,
mm-hmm.
as a matter of fact, we can help them with the paperwork
mm-hmm.
for immigration. That's another thing. And the warrants, the probation, all those matters are handled conjunctively with the probation officers. And they're very cooperative. Very
cooperative.
So
did you go and have you done representation
out
in the community?
Yeah, that's what we're working on. That's what we're working on because we need to establish the criteria for eligibility, and then we, Rene, or both of us, will go to the place and introduce ourselves. That's our next, that's probably next week.
Okay. So probably like going to the hospitals, going to
The hospital.
Where you plan to go to?
Okay, hospital. The Pioneer's Hospital. Mm-hmm. We use it very, very often. Social services.
Mm-hmm.
Social services. Even alcohol, just to pay a visit and say we're here, you know, we'll give you because we're working on the pamphlets right now.
Mm-hmm.
English and Spanish. Mm-hmm. So we're probably by next week we'll be done with the pamphlets, so we can provide you some pamphlets, or most of the agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And another is, the school system too. Because you never know who can end up in crisis or who can end up in
college too, right?
Okay. Warren Sherlock has learned to talk to him, see if we can get some, guidance on the through the system,
mm-hmm.
to send him to state, who I need to talk to. And but that's what we have planned for next week. We're going out in the community and here we are.
Well, this is starting yesterday with the Spanish show and today the English show. Getting this information out of like a STEM program, the Supportive Engagement Network. You should come up with something, another different name.
That's why I was telling you that I had problems translating the program because it's not really literally like in translate.
And we're using, I don't know, using it here. Immediate peer engagement. Don't want to confuse it with the eyes.
I'm looking here in my notes because there's so many things that we need to do, and linkage to us is extremely important. And some people, I heard this yesterday. I spoke with somebody. I will not mention the agency. I spoke with somebody, and the term I heard was how are the crazies.
Well, it's just based on, it's just based on, I mentioned before, educating the public, and one of the main sources that we hear for the radio. So, it's just, we have a program that we have held, like Outreach and Engagement Minnesota, and South Carolina does a great job. We have the financial, committee or financial that we work with Mexicali very closely, and she is awesome. You know, this is awesome. She has so much resources with Mexicali. And it's just, most of our population, a lot of our population has come from Mexicali or the first time immigration, first time immigrants, and they come to our system and they don't know how to access it. They might have known, to go to certain doctor Mexicali, but now they're here. How do they access it? And so, the STEM program will be doing that, and I think outreach and engagement does that. And here with the radio show, we do that. So it's just a lot of communication and it's constant communication. It's constant hearing, because we tend to, agencies might know about a program, people might know, but then those people might move on to different programs or different jobs, and then new people get hired, and they're not aware of our programs, so it's constantly, going to them and telling them about our programs, and that's how we spread the word, and that's how, and here, now I said again, the radio, not that we're on the web, but we can be accessed at any time, our program, to for more information on the STEM program. Again, tell us contact numbers and where you're located, and again, the criteria for the SEN.
So we're located at 202 North 8th Street on the first floor. That would be Suite 119, and the phone number is 482-4011. That's the contact phone. And again, the criteria for the admittance to our program is through discharge from conservatorship, crisis or hospitalization. And again, we're working on the pamphlets. We're
going to get the word out more.
Yes, visible in our community, and we'll speak with
you. Yes,
not yet. But again, we're being accepted very well, mostly by the mental health conditions. That's what they really
and then you know what? And we also need to know because, you know, I knew about the Sempera because I work, I have an initiative for mental health services type programs too. But that, you know, a lot of people are going to be alcohol and drugs, they don't know about the program. Adolescent, substance abuse counselors don't know about the program. There's probably a lot of people out there that don't know about the program. All the way to what's your name?
We are going to the north.
Auto Bentley.
To all those places.
Austin City.
Yes. I think our agenda is sometime.
Yeah. There's a big need out there. And
we have to be outskirts of our county. Randy, the future program, you can invite Renee Phoenix to, because he's going to be...
He's been here. Randy is really good
But now he's dealing with another agency, another program, and he will be the search for you too. To tell you more about the cases that people...
And where your guys have been.
Well, we have done again.
Everything.
And that's going to make it work.
Again, you've tried something for that for 2 weeks, so it's a new program. It's just
that we want to, now we want to, our providing services and being out and knowing that we're here. But again, that's through the radio.
Through the radio. The radio, yeah. And my husband did a great job of editing the show. Thanks, man. One last thing is that this is again for only for the mentally seriously mentally ill. Seriously mentally ill. It's not somebody that you know what you have if they're up and down or
No. It's that one for the country for a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And again the forms and I think it's available to the general to the general public, it's only internal.
Mm-hmm.
It's internal, so they can have access. Mm-hmm. Anyway. They can ask for pronouns. I'm going to have the brochures up there in the front office. And again, hopefully by today or tomorrow we're done with the address. So we can distribute them.
Again, if our listeners want more information, they can always call 482-4000. And then they can ask about the symptoms. Yeah, I heard it on the radio. Well, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you very much
for being here and informing us about the new program, the Supportive Engagement Network. Thank you. And next week, we will be back, and hopefully, Scott will be back on the radio show next week. For everybody out there, have a very good, safe weekend. Stay indoors. Drink lots of water. It's getting hot out there, so take care.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.